Today's episode is sponsored by NoCD. NoCD were one of the early sponsors and supporters of the podcast. They are dedicated to creating a better everyday life for people with OCD by making care more accessible, more connected, and more effective. NoCD now deliver exposure response prevention sessions with an OCD-trained therapist directly inside the NoCD platform, done over face-to-face video conferencing. To connect with one of their OCD therapists, schedule a 15-minute free, confidential call with NoCD's intake team. To find out more, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories. That's go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories, or visit our website for the link. And welcome to episode 209 of the OCDstories.com podcast. In this episode, I interview Nicole Falcone, and she kindly shares her OCD story with us. We go into depth into her story, getting treatment, doing ERP, learning to live with anxiety, her poetry. She reads one of her pieces out on the podcast, which is wonderful. Words of hope, and much, much more. So thank you to Nicole for her time and to you guys for listening. And without further ado, here she is. On the podcast today, I have Nicole Falcone, who has kindly agreed to share her story with us. Nicole is the author of the book Sitting Together by the River in the Sunshine, a collection of poems on motherhood. Welcome to the show, Nicole.
Thanks, Stu. I'm so excited to be here.
It's good to have you. And as you know, I always like to get people's OCD story, so as little as much detail, it'll be good to hear yours.
Yes. Okay, well, so I don't really remember, or I wasn't really a fretful or anxious or nervous kid. I had a really happy childhood, and I've always been optimistic. I still am, even with OCD. But so I don't really remember having it as a young kid. But as I got older, when I graduated from college, or actually while I was in college, I started having some intrusive thoughts, and I didn't really know what they were at the time, but I was speaking to my husband before the episode, because him and I met when we were 19 in college, and I was like, what kind of things did I do in college that made us realize I had OCD? And there weren't that many, but for instance, I would have things that were bad luck. Like I remember going to put on socks, and all of a sudden I would have a thought, if I wear these socks, my sister will die, or, you know, me and Pat, my husband, are going to break up, or I'm going to do terrible on a test. And I would like be so distressed. It sounds like kind of crazy when you say it out loud, but like you're sitting there staring at the socks and you're like, can you just put the socks on? And then I would put the socks on, take the socks off, or, you know, just then I would, I didn't know about exposure yet. So I didn't, you know, I the idea of like embracing the uncomfortableness was not in my repertoire. So it was more make yourself feel comfortable so you could get to class and move on from this strange thought. And so that was one instance. And I also, I'm an athlete and I played sports in high school. And in college, I didn't play. It was Division I. I didn't play, but I still worked out a lot. And I remember going for runs, and I would say I was competitive, so it was kind of like a little, maybe like a competitive element, but I would be like, oh, I have to run to this block, and if I don't run to this block, something bad will happen. So again, like the bad luck thing, or feeling kind of obsessive about exercise, like if I don't exercise, you know, who knows what, whatever my brain would throw out, it would kind of launch onto different concepts. So that was college, but it wasn't like enough. My whole family is in medicine, and I know a lot about healthcare. So it wasn't enough that I thought something was really wrong. I just was like, ah, that's a weird idiosyncrasy, a weird quirk. And then when we graduated college, I got a job right away working in Manhattan. I'm from Long Island. And I remember I was a journalist, and I was excited about the job. And I was like, I don't feel anxious about this job. I don't feel anxious about graduating college, even though my husband and I were going to be long distance. But maybe I did feel a little nervous. Maybe like I don't think that being nervous is what causes OCD, but just like the timing of my early 20s and a big change, that was really when all of a sudden I developed real signs of having OCD. So if I could tell a story of like a before and after, this was the
Yeah.
after. So I was driving home. I used to go to yoga or the gym after work, after taking the train, and I was driving home from a hot yoga class, and it was super dark because my parents' neighborhood's really dark. And I remember seeing these two boys or teenagers on the side of the road, but I didn't see them until I was right up next to them in the car, and they startled me. I was like, oh my God, what if I had hit them with my car? Which, is like people would think that, but it stuck like glue. It was like I could not lose that, like, you're like the fear that kind of filled me with, the terror of like, what if I hit them with the car? And then it was like a loop. Like my brain just could not say to itself, like, well, of course you didn't hit them with the car. Like you would have felt it. It didn't matter. It was just like an endless, like, what if I hit them? And so I drove around the block, and while I was driving, I was like, what am I doing? Like, am I losing my mind? But I just felt so terrified that I had hurt these kids. And I think I drove around the block like 20 times in a pitch dark neighborhood. And the other part of my brain was saying, like, the more you drive, like, the more likely you are going to end up hitting something. Like, you're like staring at the side of the road in the pitch dark. But I was so upset and worried. And when I finally like wrenched myself away, this was like 12 years ago, and I can still remember like, how scared I felt when I finally got myself home. I'm very close with my parents and my sister, and my mom was downstairs probably watching TV. And I came downstairs and I didn't tell her the thought. I said to her, and my mom's so wonderful because she's so good at, she's a nurse and she worked in the critical care in Bellevue. It's a big hospital in Manhattan. So she's just like not fazed by things. It's a wonderful person to be raised by. Because I was like, Mom, if there was an accident near our house, do you think we would hear the ambulances? And she looked at me puzzled. I need to ask her now what she was thinking. But she was like, yeah, we'd hear it. But it was just like, that was my first like checking reassurance. Like now I know what I was doing, but at like, I have so much more knowledge now of what I was doing. But at the time, I just wanted reassurance that like if something had happened, I would know, because the guilt of like accidentally hitting someone and then leaving the scene, like it was just one of the most horrible things I can imagine doing. And then I got on my computer and I started Googling. I mean, it was really a full-blown attack. Like I started Googling like, boys hit by car, as if like the news would be covering it like 3 minutes after the event. So it was, I could laugh about it now, like so many things with OCD, like you're like, what? But while you're in it, it's hell. And so that was that. And then it wasn't, like life with anything. It's not like, I mean, not for everyone, but for me, it's not like I spent my whole life like all day living with these intrusive thoughts. Like I was working and I had lots of friends, and but it started becoming like a ticker under my, like an undercurrent of my life. Like I was going through my normal life, but then the next thing that popped up was, so I dealt with that fear of like, did I hit someone? And that just like stayed in my mind. And then the next fear was, all of a sudden I became like so aware of how dirty Manhattan is, which like it's always dirty. That is true. It's filled with millions of people. But I became like really, I didn't want to hold, and like on the Long Island Railroad, I would be like, I don't want to touch, like the kind of stereotypical contamination fears just came out. And then I started worrying I had AIDS, which all, and then I felt guilty about worrying about that. And I did lots of compulsions around that. So yeah, it was pretty, really entertaining, really fun time when that first started. And I wasn't, so I'm really open. Like I kind of, I would say one of my qualities is, I like to be I'm not shy. And so it was strange to have this experience, but not now that I look back, it's funny like how long it took. It didn't take me so long, but it was probably about like 5 or 6 months until I told my parents and Pat what was going on. And I'm sure they noticed some behaviors, but my parents are such, I don't know, they're just such lovely parents. And they're, as a, I'm a mother of two kids, and I think like you don't want to, I don't know, I guess maybe they wanted to like see, let it evolve a little bit and see what was happening since I was functioning perfectly fine. But I don't think they realized what was happening. So, you know, push ahead 6 months, I'm in my early 20s and it's Christmas morning and I haven't told anyone yet about what's going on. And but I'm doing the driving checking thing like constantly. Like driving became a really grueling experience, not all the time. Like if people were in the car, I was able to, you know, do it fine. But when I was by myself, I would hit a pothole and I would wonder if I hit a person. And it was just, it's so frustrating. Like the thing about OCD is like it feels like a prison because you know it's illogical, but you are continuing to do it. And so it's really painful to feel like why is my brain, especially before I like had read and researched about OCD and now understand what's happening more. But I would drive to the gym and it would take me like 20 minutes to get home, even though it was only a 5 minute drive. And on Christmas morning, I think I went out for a bike ride and I hit a pothole and I went and I was nervous I hit something. And I was like, it was freezing because I'm from New York, so it was cold on Christmas. And I was like riding my bike, I think in probably a few circles before I realized like I had to like, you know, get myself home before my family was wondering where I was. And I sat down, or maybe it was the day before, because then when we sat down for breakfast, I just broke down in tears. And I was like, I think I have OCD. I also was a medical writer. That was my job. I worked for Johns Hopkins as a medical writer. So I was like very well attuned to medicine. So I knew at this point that it was OCD. But still, for some reason, I still like hadn't looked into yet like treatment. I just knew that that's what I was dealing with. And so I broke down into tears and told my parents that I think I have OCD. And they were so calm. I mean, they were pained to see how distressed I was. And when I told them what I was doing, I could see how, you know, heartbroken they were to see like I was suffering in this way. But they were like, okay, you know, this is, we'll deal with it. You'll figure out. I had already, I think, looked into like treat, you know, therapists and they were like, you're gonna be okay. And so that's kind of how I'm lucky to have a family like that and a husband like that and friends like that. So I feel like I've had a really strong support system, which makes a huge difference, because it makes the hard times easier. Yeah, so then but I mean, that was 12 years ago and I still, you know, it's still, it's not like it like disappeared after I told everyone and I started therapy. So at that point I went to graduate school at, I enrolled, I went to Columbia in the city, which was very exciting. And I moved into the city, which was huge because it was kind of like an enormous exposure for me because the city felt so dirty. And I don't know, I mean, maybe that was, you know, like now I would like if I would never like want to not do something because my OCD, but at that point it was a very I didn't have like I was untreated, and so my compulsions like went kind of crazy with contamination. Like things would fall on the floor and I would leave them there because I thought, you know, the city was dirty and I'm walking in the city and so therefore my dorm room is dirty. And I would clean a lot. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like I probably could talk to you for 5 hours about all the different. Have some Pat just walked in to say I'd get into fights with him because he would put his, you know, suitcase on the floor of the subway like other people do, and then put it on my. I remember one day he came to visit and like had it on the floor or on the seat next to him, and then put it on my bed. And I, you know, it was as if he lit me and our room on fire. Like I was so upset by it.
I can
Yeah,
relate
so
to that.
Yeah, thank you.
Overflowing fruit store.
He's okay. This is a live interview, babe. one time
Extra
the
guest.
one time I was really worried about poop at this point. So like pooping was a pain because obviously you have to poop. So I like would feel like, you know, I was dirty after I never really got into showering a lot, but I just would feel like dirt. I remember the first therapist I went to was like, well, I don't know. I don't think she was an exposure person because she asked me, you know, she was always trying to eliminate my anxiety, which now I know is not the answer. but yeah, like my like a toilet overflowed. Can you imagine having worrying about poop and then having your toilet overflowed? Like now I would be like, wow, what an opportunity for exposure. But it was like the worst. I never really had panic attacks, but maybe that is what it was at that moment because I, you know, really broke down, and I called my dad who had to walk me through like cleaning up the poop. And yeah, it was really fun. I've come a long way.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, sorry, go
yeah,
on.
no, I mean, it's yeah, it's like a, you know, decade worth of stories. So I could fast forward to my. It's interesting, like the word recovery, but I guess that is kind of how I feel. I'm in now, even though, you know, it's a lifelong. I think it's Steve Pensel. Is that Pencil? Is that
Fred Penzel or
Fred
Steve
Penzel?
Phillipson?
Fred Penzel.
Yeah.
He's on Long. He practices on Long Island. I went to
Okay.
their clinic. But I read. I use. He has this handout about like 10 things you should remember about having OCD that I like. And when I first learned it was chronic, that was like really
Yeah, tough.
distressing. Yeah. It's like the worst news. You want this to just go away. But then I realized, sorry, my dog's
That's
barking.
okay.
But then I don't know. I guess like I realized it's chronic in the way, yeah, like it does suck. Like I wish I could take a magic pill. I wish it could just disappear. You know, if I woke up and didn't have OCD, I would not feel bad about it. But I've accepted, you know, yeah, like I'm gonna live with intrusive thoughts. But they don't control my life anymore, like the way they used to. And I, you know, there's gonna be days that are hard, but I know that, you know, the more I avoid something, the worse it will be. So kind of all the lessons you want your kids to know too, like if we have a fear. You know, like I'm always talking to my daughter about if we're afraid of something, like lean into it. You know, it's interesting when they're three because you're like, well, if, like really don't touch fire. But like if she says she doesn't want to do something, it's kind of interesting, like learning and being treated having OCD because I have to kind of think about like, you know, so much of being a parent is like wanting to protect your kids. But I've also learned that it's kind of, we can't really protect them from so many things, and we have to just instead make them resilient and be able to, you know, lean into uncomfortable situations and come out stronger for it. Or maybe not come out stronger, but just kind of survive it. Sorry, I'm a little bit babbling.
No, it's all
You can
good.
cut
No, I liked it.
that.
Yeah, it's important, and I think that there's a moral to that of in recovery and in therapy, you don't just deal with OCD, you learn so much more than dealing with OCD, which is a wonderful thing, but you learn more than
Right.
that. And in your case with the kids, help give you lessons to give the kids that are going to help them be more resilient and more brave and courageous, because you can role model that.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. Yeah,
No
I know.
worries.
I don't really view it as like a gift, but my brother-in-law sometimes says it's my superpower. And I just have to harness it in the right way. And I'm like, that's a nice way of saying it. I'm not sure I'll call it a superpower, but but I like that it's taught me a lot.
Yeah, no, absolutely, I agree. Okay, cool. Well, thank you for that, and for going into so much detail. Yeah, but so how was the whole kind of therapy process for you?
Yeah, so exposure, I've gone through. I've done exposure therapy with about four different therapist over the past 12 years, and mostly it's from where I've lived, or just finding the right fit. But when I first was diagnosed and I went for the first time, I think the big thing for me is I bought this book. Hold on, I want to Google it really quick, but I think it's like an old book about OCD. Maybe it's Overcoming Obsessive and Compulsive Disorder by Edna,
Oh,
the big,
Edna Ferber.
it was one of her books, but I bought that and I could send it to you after. And then I did the exposure therapy with this therapist. But I learned reading that book before I did the exposure therapy really educated me on, what was going on in my brain, that I wasn't as much as I knew, like you could Google OCD and other people have it, you still feel like you're the only person in the world who is hysterically crying in your dorm room about poop or not able to hold the subway or, driving in circles because they're afraid of imaginary people that they hit. So when I read the stories, like that's why I love your podcast, but like at the back of the book, it gave stories of recovery. Like it would tell what people had been doing, and what their lives looked like, and then where they were now after they did exposure therapy. So that was really motivating and hopeful for me. And so then I started with Columbia has really nice like health care being a university. So they had good therapists that we could see like when we were students there. So I went to one. And that was my first experience with exposure therapy. And we started with kind of, I guess probably did like a hierarchy. I think one of the biggest things I suffered with is because I'm like really outgoing and have always, I don't know, feel very comfortable around people. I always feel like I would get into therapy and kind of pretend I was better than I was. I don't know if you as a therapist see people do this. Like I would like be, I don't know, like I would like downplay how much I was suffering. So
Yep,
then the
a lot of people do
therapist
it.
would, so like I feel like I couldn't really, I made it seem like I was functioning, but it was really inhibiting my functioning. But at that point, I couldn't really admit to that. And I like just, made light of it, like joked about it a lot. But regardless, we still started doing exposure therapy and just immediately, like, it's amazing like how fast it works. It seems kind of miraculous, but it's just the brain learning like that. Like the amygdala, even if it's firing, it doesn't have to. Like you don't have to be afraid of that thing. So we, like I was afraid of the floor of the city. So she took all my everything in my bag and put it on the lobby floor of her very, very busy office, which is disgusting. I mean, now I have no issue with the Manhattan ground, but still, I'm like, oh,
Yeah.
I mean,
You have
like
a
nobody's.
normal level of
Yeah,
respect
like
for it,
nobody's thrilled by like
yeah.
their, yeah. And like she put my phone face down and then I'd like rub it all over my face and not shower when I got home. And like that was a big thing. Like I would shower when I got home from working in the city and kind of rinse, decontaminate myself. So I had to go into my bed wearing all my clothes, pretty standard stuff. But I felt so good. Like that's like what I tell people now with OCD. Like it's such a confidence booster when you finally do face your fear, even though it feels like, sickening. Especially if you like fully embrace it at that point. Like, I've done exposures still that I'm working on that I'm like only half in. Like my, I'm not fully in, and those I'm just not getting better yet because I'm just not fully in. But the ones that you are fully in, you just see how it really works. So that was my first experience, and then we moved because my husband is a physician and he got into med school, and I couldn't find a good. That was Western PA and it was just like a desert. Like there was no good psychologist who, I knew enough that they needed to be people who treated with exposure therapy, not just someone who said they knew about OCD. So I kind of just did exposure on my own. And the most ultimate exposure was at that point I became a teacher in an elementary school. And since a lot of my stuff was contamination, it was like I was just living in a petri dish. And like eventually it became like too hard to keep up with, like whatever, washing my hands or sanitizing the desks, like just being immersed in the kids and enjoying it. was an exposure in and of itself. So I got better at that point. But I would still do things, but I can't really remember that season of life being like that bad with my OCD. And then when we moved back, I would say like it stayed pretty good. And then in terms of having to go back to treatment, to rehash exposure was when I was pregnant. Not with my first, I have Paige is 3 and my son Sam is 7 months. And I was ready for it to kind of really ramp up when I was pregnant with Paige, but I was working and doing a job I loved in an education innovation lab. And it was, I don't know, it just, who knows why, but like, it wasn't like I was constantly maintaining exposure. It just kind of like my OCD was just kind of subclinical for a while. And then when I was pregnant, not subclinical, but like, you know, out of a 10, it was probably like a 3 or a 4. It wasn't really impeding so much. And I was existing like that. And then when I was pregnant with Sam, it got really bad again, which I knew could happen. So I was prepared for it, but nothing can really prepare you for like, you know, the fears that overcome your brain. I became really worried about, we have a lot of feral cats in our neighborhood, which is strange because we live in the suburbs in Pennsylvania. It's like not a city, but people just feed cats. And so I became really worried about diseases that can affect pregnant women with cats and like psych, like, you know, like not being able, not wanting to have our daughter walk on the grass because who knows if there was cat poop, or not wanting to hang Christmas lights. And so I was like, I think it's time for me to do exposure therapy again. So I found a really good psychologist. I'll have to send her this episode, Alyssa Jared in Philly, and I live an hour and a half from Philly. But she agreed to treat me virtually, which was really nice because I had Paige was only a year and a half or 2 years old, so it would have been hard for me to like get in and out of the city with her. And so we did virtual sessions, and that was like, this is my next before and after. Like working with her, I feel like I finally really learned the keys to living well, with OCD and what I have to do to manage it in a good way.
No, that's awesome. I'm glad that was helpful for you. And what was it like doing it over a video platform versus face-to-face therapy?
I was kind of, you know, like I do a lot of video work. Like my work is national, so I use video conferencing a lot. So it felt really natural to me. And in some ways, I think once she assessed that I wasn't doing it to avoid something, like that could be a very a thing people like us would do, you know, like I don't want to go into the city. I think once she assessed that, that I would be able to do the exposures, it was really helpful because a lot of my exposures involved like my daughter, and my own house. So in some ways it was almost better because we could tackle the things I was truly afraid of that we might not. I would, you know, one of the big things that I still work on a lot is fear of like sickness with Paige. So like, you know, it's flu season. Every young mother is not thrilled about like their infant getting the flu, but you know, people like I have to manage against that, and not wanting to touch doors and that kind of thing. So she would even have me call her, and we would go out like around my town, and I would do exposures. And you know, open a door without, I would wear, sometimes I would like very sneakily, or I think it was sneaky, I'm sure my husband and like family realize I do this, but I would always have like my winter gloves on. I mean, it's cold, it's 30 degrees, but like, you know, it wasn't just because my hands were cold. Like I would use it to open the door to the coffee shop or whatever. Like, you know, it's very insidious, and it's easy to be like very, very sneaky when you want to do your compulsions in a way. So always using hand sanitizer before we would eat. And that's still like, I would say like I've eliminated so many of my, like I was just talking to my sister that like intrusive thoughts, like fear of being a pedophile, that's okay. Like I can deal with that. bad. But like the flu, like, oh, the flu. So it's just funny, like the way, the things that your brain latches onto and like the hardest challenges. So like the top of my hierarchy is still like a challenge I'm working on overcoming. But I try to handle it with like a levity these days, and I know the right thing to do, not wear the gloves.
Yeah, absolutely.
So virtual was a huge help and like a big asset, and she does it a lot, she says, so she was really used to it.
Yeah, no, that's good to hear your take on that. And yeah, were there any kind of epiphany moments or light bulb moments where things just clicked for you in understanding OCD or recovery?
Yes. So it was like this past, well, year and a half, I guess it was last year. So I think, I had gone to lots of therapists, and I remember therapists saying, like, how is your anxiety this week? And asking me to rank my anxiety. So I, just like them, felt like the idea was my anxiety should be low. Like, that's what I should be aiming for, a week with no anxiety. Like, I remember seeing a local therapist, and I said to her, oh, I wasn't stressed at all this week. I didn't have any obsessive thoughts. And it was finally with Alyssa. I don't know if she's like, I don't know how this, what happened exactly, if she just outright told me, or maybe she did. I think she was like, Nicole, the answer is not like to eliminate your anxiety. I mean, hopefully that's like a side effect of this is you'll feel less anxious, but that's not what we're going for. It's really about learning to live with anxiety and learning to like follow your values. I mean, ACT was a huge part of ACT, which I learned through your podcast, was a huge part of opening up to like, oh yeah, like it's even if I feel like my chest is beating and it feels uncomfortable and I feel like I want to crawl out of my skin, like I'm still gonna go to a busy market during peak winter months where people are coughing and sneezing. I'm still gonna go to the playground and let Paige sit in the dirt, even though my brain is telling me, there might be cat poop in it. I'm still gonna hug Pat when he gets home from working in the hospital all day. Even if it makes me uncomfortable and anxious, I have to do it anyway. Or I want to do it anyway. It's not even I have to, like I'm lucky to like be alive and do it anyway. And of course, like it sucks. Like this is a shitty disorder. Like I feel like I wish our brains weren't telling us these scary things all day. But yeah, when I learned like that the idea was not for me to stop my brain from doing it was really when everything's kind of changed. So that and the like leaning into uncomfortableness. That was really a huge thing, and I use it in so many parts of my life, like not just OCD. Like I consider myself a really adventurous person. Like that's a value of mine. And so it was interesting to watch how I'd like orchestrated a life where I was avoiding things just completely. Like small things, like I love people, and I wouldn't want to touch people. Like the winters, like especially like my, I think I have like a seasonal affective contamination, as like in the winter. I want to study that, but yeah, like I wouldn't, I want to shake someone's hand, and like my OCD is like warning, 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 but I felt like I was like, yeah, I wasn't living like as full of a life because I was listening to my brain, and I don't like to set it up as like an enemy. Like I can't do that. I really think, it's a faulty part of my brain that's really, it thinks it needs to be afraid, and it's my job to be like, it's okay. We're gonna do it anyway. You're gonna survive.
Yeah, I like that. And yeah, you mentioned leaning in there, and you wrote a poem about that.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Should I read it?
Yeah, if you want, absolutely.
Sure. So, I wrote this book about motherhood. I write poetry, and I don't write a lot of poems about my OCD. This poem actually touches on that, but this is one I wrote. Leaning. I don't write many poems about my fretfulness, worries, No need to create more spaces for those thoughts to live, to be the plot of my day. I have much better, more worthy subjects. But today, I told you how proud I was when you faced your fear. A bug was sharing your water table, and you shrieked, then kept going, told me the bug was friendly. I was not a fretful kid, but at 22, I had the thought, what if I hit someone with my car? I was driving, it was dark, there were teenagers on the side of the road, I could barely see them, it was dark. What if, do you think, could I? I drove around the block 20 times. I looked and looked. The thought stuck like gum. My memory of that moment like a skipped beat, a loop that couldn't end, a door that didn't quite seem locked. Are my hands clean? Did I touch that? What if? I can't get the rhythm right for this poem. The normal bounce, lightness is gone. When I think of how I couldn't touch my own dorm room floor in graduate school, my mom visiting and me telling her when a pen fell, I left it there. Her face, the worry. It's been a decade now. I now know so much more. There is treatment. It is hard. And then there is this. Would I know how to teach you to wade in the water with what you are afraid of if I had not spent so much time in there myself? I can touch the floor now. I drive my car. I still get stuck. My brain may always work like that. But I wade, ride the waves, float even, look up at the sun.
Beautiful. Yeah, I love that.
Thank you.
And yeah, thank you for reading it. It really comes alive when, for me anyway, when poetry's read.
Same.
And the end bit about looking up at the sun, what's that about? I mean, I have a feeling, but...
Well, I think, you know, for so long, I guess like the first half of the decade, the first 10 years of the whole decade and then the last 2 years of suffering, it was like I was fighting so hard with myself all the time, with my brain. And through the stuff I've learned, through the experts you've brought on the show and the people I've worked with and the things I've read, it was, you know, the element mindfulness has become a huge practice of mine. And not like I sit every day and I think I'm going to be mindful, just like a lens of seeing life. And yeah, like learning how to, when I'm overtaken with a fear, like when my brain tells me we're going to have to move because there's cats and maybe we want other kids and they're going to get encephalitis if I get pregnant again, I just kind of have to breathe and, you know, find the joy, like whatever I'm doing that I'm the joy, and, you know, look up at the sun. I'm an eternal optimist despite having a very creatively dark brain. So it's an interesting juxtaposition to live with. But that's all we can do. I haven't studied Buddhism yet, but, you know, like the life is suffering. I always felt that was such a dark mindset. But the more I've, you know, thought and learned and pondered and meditated on, I'm like, I understand that idea. Like, yes, there is a lot of suffering, but it gets how we approach it and our response to it kind of dictates the kind of life we're going to have with OCD or with everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm no expert in Buddhism and I could be completely wrong here. So everyone forgive me if that's the case. But the bit that always gets... it never gets talked about after that, which is life is, and it depends how it's translated, but yeah, life is suffering. And I think the next line is until you realize there's no need to suffer.
Oh, I love that. How did we drop that?
Yeah, well, I think it's, yeah, I don't know how. So I will fact check this, and it hasn't been edited out, then it's semi-correct. But yeah, this idea of life is hard, it's suffering, until you learn you don't need to suffer, which is where their idea of enlightenment comes in, and transcending thoughts and all that, which is a nice angle of,
yeah,
which is, yeah, what therapy is to a point.
It really is. And I'm in a Kimberly,
yeah,
the anxiety toolkit. What's Kim's last name?
Kim Quinlan.
Yeah, I love Kim. Thank you, Kim. I listen to her podcast too. And I'm in her Facebook group, and it's a really nice community of people who are very enlightened with, are living with OCD. And I don't know, like I don't remember who, if I posted this or if someone else posted this or if we all talked about this, but it's like, having OCD, like we have, it's like we're in a prison sometimes, but the door's open. Like we just have to walk out the door. But when you're in the prison, it feels excruciating. Like it feels like, how are we ever going to get out that door? And that is kind of the most painful and also the best part of having OCD. Like there are times when I've said, like, oh, I wish I just had something else, like anything, like give me anything, nothing mental health, like just give me something else. Let me have rheumatoid arthritis or diabetes or a heart condition or, because it feels so frustrating to know that we have the key to our own, like we're being better is often like within our own control. It's a strange, but it's also what's kind of a gift about it in a way, doesn't feel like it sometimes, but
yeah, no, absolutely. With the right support and help and mindset, it can get better.
Yeah. And I don't take medicine for it, but I have to say, like, listening to your people on your show talk about medicine, it's kind of opened my, I've kind of shifted my perspective of medicine. Especially when I think of like, what if one of our kids developed OCD? I would 100% consider medicine. So I'm like, why would I do that for them and not for me, So after, so it's changed my mindset a lot. So thank you for that.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad that comes across.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. And will there be more OCD poetry?
Yes, I hope. I actually was thinking of, I wrote a story that got published in Scary Mommy about OCD. I could send that to you. That was exciting. Yeah, that's a big like parenting blog. But I think I'll continue. I still write poetry, so OCD will certainly pop up in my poetry. And then I'm also thinking of writing a book of essays about all the things that have gone on in 12 years, all the stories my OCD has spun. because I've really, Sharla Nicely and is it Sharla?
Sharla, yeah.
Sharla. And then who's her, someone, he's a radio host in California.
Jeff Bell.
Oh my God. Jeff, if you're listening to this, like his book, that when I was pregnant with Sam, I remember reading it while I had restless legs when I was sitting in the bath because I was suffering with restless legs and just weeping because his story, especially being like a radio host, because I'm a journalist and feeling like he was living this like double existence. It was so helpful and really one of the most wonderful things I've read. It brought a lot of hope. So
that's great.
Maybe I could write something that could bring someone that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so just general words of hope for people with OCD.
Let me think. I know how painful it is, and it's excruciating, and it's so hard. But we can do it but the more you avoid the thing you're afraid of, it's not going to get better. I mean, I've tried, like I'm trying to find a way for that to happen. It's just not happening. I drive now and I don't even have that. Like, that's what's amazing. That's how exposure therapy works. Like, that's just gone. Like I used to spend like an hour driving and now I drive and I hit a garbage can. I'm not worried. It's a person. But yeah, we have to learn to live with the uncomfortableness and it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay, but it's going to be hard, but you're not alone. There's so many people like us out there, even if we feel alone and crazy, but you can do it and join some of these Facebook groups and listen to the podcast. It makes a big difference. Read books. Don't suffer alone in your house.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and if you could pick up the phone and call your 20-year-old self, what would you tell her?
What was it? At 20, I was like a junior in college, probably. I mean, It's gonna be a fun ride. Like, you know, despite all of this, like the OCD stuff, like we were talking before we started, this is just one part of who I am as a human being, just one part of who, you know, we all are. And it's not the main, I don't want it to be like the main story of my life. So I guess I would say, you're gonna have the life you always imagined you wanted. And you're also gonna be afraid of things you never knew you were even afraid of, but you'll get through it.
Absolutely. And then similar question, you got a billboard. What do you want written on that billboard?
I know, I knew you'd ask this because I listen to your podcast every week. I think I, so there's two things I really like. One is for us with, so the first I might do, embrace uncertainty. And the other saying I really love, which isn't really an OCD saying, but maybe is, don't let perfect be the enemy of good. It's one of my favorite sayings. I use it all the time for everything.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, look, thank you so much on everything. And before we finish up, is there anything else that you wanted to share or say that I haven't asked you?
I'm trying to think. Mindful. Well, maybe just on ACT. So I really feel like ex I would not have known about ACT if it wasn't for you and Kimberly talking about it. It really is not something that any therapist has brought up with me. But I think it's a really nice, I think it's really worth investigating. And I bought the workbook you guys recommended. And it's not even that I went through the whole workbook. It's just under, I think one big thing about exposure is it requires a lot of motivation on the part of us. Like we're trying to set up a life where we don't have to do that thing. So asking us to do the thing is, you know, easier said than done. So I liked like the I really enjoyed like the idea of like the value based, you know, the what are the values you're trying to live. And also, I liked like the language element of it. I'm also a writer, so maybe that just interested me. But just like how we apply language to ideas and why the, you know, just like what it felt very philosophical. Yeah, so I would really look into ACT. And even if you live in a place like I live in central Pennsylvania, and it's not like, I mean, there's a lot of hospitals and medicine, but there's not like the healthcare for OCD, there's not a ton. So you look outside your, you know, work hard for yourself, like you're worth it. Find, you know, even if you feel like every person you're reaching out to is giving you, like in America, the health insurance, like it could be exorbitantly expensive, or you're never going to find someone to treat you, like keep working on it. And if not, like use all the free resources as much as you can in the meantime. Because at the end of the day, it's really us having to do it on our own. Therapists guide you, but it's really about your daily life.
Good point. Yeah, excellent. Look, thank you so much for sharing your story and all the information and all the detail. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Stu. It was so fun. Sorry for babbling.
It's excellent, don't worry. So there you have it. Thank you for listening to today's episode. And don't forget, today's podcast is sponsored by NoCD. To find out more about NoCD and their treatment plans, head over to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or visit our website for the link. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. Until we speak, take care.